Hear ye, hear ye. Gather round, educators, for Classroom Conversations, your source for teacher talk. Classroom Conversations is known throughout the land as the platform for Georgia's teachers. Whichever school crest you bear, you mustn't miss today's entertainment, sponsored by the Georgia Department of Education and Georgia Public Broadcasting. I'm Ashley Mingwasser, and I'm here to serve your royal servant, if you will, because that's what you do in the presence of royalty, lower oneself. Each season, we bring you a teacher so revered and celebrated across the state. They have a fan following. And why wouldn't today's guest? She's a 23-year career educator who has been named Teacher of the Year across two separate districts, Rockdale County and White County, and two separate decades, the 2000s and the 2020s. This year, she's ascended to her highly recognized placement as the 2025 Georgia Teacher of the Year. Let the trumpets fanfare for a teacher from the North, Holly Witcher. Holly is a special education teacher at Tesnity Gap Elementary School in White County School District. Holly's school sits perched in Cleveland, Georgia, near Helen. Royalty for Holly still means slipping a special circular accessory over her head, but it's not a crown, it's a lanyard. Royalty for Holly means her school is her castle. Royalty for Holly means sitting in very small chairs or even kneeling to connect with her much shorter K-2 students and abjuring the throne. But most impressively, royalty for Holly means connecting with each of you, Georgia's educators, with a rejuvenating message of inspiration, which you'll soon hear. Let's welcome Georgia's Teacher of the Year, Holly Witcher. Hi, Holly.
Hi, what a beautiful welcome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We're going to definitely add the trumpets blowing in the post-production edit.
Absolutely.
You've got to have that. Have you ever met a royal, Holly, an actual one?
I do not think that I have ever met a royal.
I don't think I have either, but I did have a giant crush on Prince William, and I fancied myself his wife. So, Kate, who? Honestly. But it's got to be exciting to be in the position you're in right now. Can you tell us from the inside of the Teacher of the Year Royal Circle? Is there a secret handshake or an initiation ceremony?
Oh my goodness gracious. It's so funny that you say that, because the night that I was announced, my husband said it's a little bit like a secret society.
It is.
It's kind of crazy. It's really, really cool. And it's interesting because there's not a lot of people that have done this. And so trying to maneuver through things, I'm so thankful for all of the ones that have come before.
Yes.
Who can kind of guide me and say, these are things that you can be expecting, because it's a whole different, I teach kindergarten through second grade. So now I'm speaking with adults and it's just a whole different world.
Different audience, right?
Very, very different.
Yes. It strikes me that there should at least be a Teacher of the Year choir. No? I think you guys could travel the state.
Maybe I could get with that. I do love to sing.
A suggestion you can make this year. I did see a picture of your, I guess I can call it your coronation. It's pretty iconic. And I hope your audience listening today will go and find it and get the same chills that I got. But let me set the stage of this picture, and then I want you to look at it. You're up on the dais. You're with State School Superintendent Richard Woods. He's handing you this beautiful glass award. What do they call that? Is there a name for it?
A glass award.
Glass award. Your name and the fact that you're the 2025 Teacher of the Year is etched, emblazoned on the front there. You're wearing a beautiful, dare I say, royal green color dress. And what else is happening? I want to show you this picture and see if you remember this moment, what's happening in that picture.
Yes. I mean, and right before when they had just named me, and I was sitting beside Jenny Cofield, another one of the finalists, and I was going, is this real? Is this real? Is this real? And she's like, you've got this. But it's so overwhelming. It's so hard to describe that feeling and that moment. There's just not words.
This picture gives me goosebumps because you're crying tears of joy, but there's the biggest smile on your face. And it is just so beautiful to look at.
Such an honor.
I know. And I'm so excited to sit here with you. Seeing your smile makes me cry. And I hope our teachers will go look at it. I can just feel the zeal you have for your role. And your fans have a lot to say about you. I did a deep dive on the Facebook comments when you made your announcement. And I just want to tell our audience a little bit about what they're saying out here. Tell me if any of this resonates. Georgia needs more educators like Holly Witcher. I could go on about the amazing work she accomplished with my son.
Oh.
One commenter said, I have admired your heart for kids from day one since meeting you. Mm. Another one, it is an honor to say that I taught with you in Rockdale County, so probably a fellow teacher. Mm. And I love this one, proud to have a phenomenal special educator as the Georgia Teacher of the Year. Isn't that nice?
It is. It's so overwhelming. I mean, just, you know, you do what you do and you just get out there and you do it every day and you don't ever expect to receive any recognition for it because you're not in it for the recognition.
That's right.
And then to be able to read those words, it's so, I mean, it's amazing.
It just goes to show that you're in alignment and that this is the path you were meant to be on.
Oh, man.
Let's take them back to the beginning, though. We have to start at why you became a teacher. That seed was planted at a young age. Tell us.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't have anybody in my family that ever taught. I just kind of always knew that I wanted to teach. I love working with students. My sisters would tell you I was very bossy. So I just grew up wanting to teach. And anybody who was around me would say, this is where your pathway is. So I don't ever remember making a cognizant decision like, I think that I'm going to teach. It's just kind of something I always wanted to do. So I had some phenomenal educators who taught me, and I kind of wanted to do the same thing. And they followed me throughout my years in high school and in college. And still to this day, in my first year teaching, I was teaching alongside of the same teachers who taught me. And so there's just nothing like that.
So your elementary educators really inspired you.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
And you are in an elementary school. What have you taught most recently at Tesnatee Gap?
So I have most recently been teaching special education, kindergarten through second grade. I teach a self-contained special education class and love it. I have the best job in the world. Nobody could tell me any different and convince me any differently.
What do you love about it? Why is it the best job?
Watching these students who come in who might have delays or difficulties and watching them overcome those barriers, it's so awe-inspiring. When I was moved into this position, because it's not where I started, I told my principal, I said, I will do this for 6 months and get you through the remainder of the year, but this is not where my heart is. And I spent 1 month in there and said, this is it. This is where I have been called to be. But it's just watching them, knowing that they have difficulties and having that ability to find ways to help support them. It's just a very fulfilling job. It's a very hard job.
Yes.
But you come away knowing that you are making a difference in the lives of those students and that you're making a difference in the lives of those families. They're really cool kids.
You say all the time, in my class, we dream big and we celebrate
big.
Yes,
we do.
How?
Oh, man. So the cool thing is they all know what one another's strengths and weaknesses are. And so when somebody overcomes something, it's just the neatest thing to watch. We'll be sitting at the carpet. And I remember a student a few years ago who was struggling to identify the numbers. You would show him a number and he couldn't tell you what it was. And we'd been working on it for probably a year and a half. And one day I pointed it out and he said it and all the kids went, you did it. You did it. You know, and I'm like, where did that come from? And so they all know one another's strengths and weaknesses. It's a true family. So when somebody meets a goal or something that they've been trying to achieve, they all celebrate together. And so it is truly just a big family, you know, all the things together.
Well, you are making instruction a physical experience, an emotional experience when you're doing that celebrating. And that strikes me as something that could happen in every classroom.
Oh, absolutely.
So just the whole part about my students know one another's strengths and weaknesses. Ooh, we could dive deep into that.
Yep.
But you did say it's also a hard job. Thank goodness you have your really intense hobby, mountain biking.
Yeah.
Okay. Explain this to me.
Oh, I love it. So my boys got into mountain biking when we moved to White County years ago. We moved up there so that they would have time to run around. I wanted my boys to be able to be boys and be in the woods. And they had some friends who got them into mountain biking and they were at practice 3 nights a week, 2.5 hours a night. And I thought, well, I'm here with them. I might as well train with them and do with them as well. And I thought this will be really easy to do, right? So I got back on my bike that I had not been on since probably 2002, 2003 and found out, oh my gracious, it was killing me. I thought I'm going to lose I felt like I was going to pass out. But I went through the training program and we have a great association that we work with, the Georgia Cycling Association, and they have coaches training and all sorts of things to teach us what to do. So I was trained and I became a coach. And so now, while my boys are out on their bikes, I'm out there with them as well, coaching.
And your husband's a coach, too.
He is, too. Yes,
so this is a family affair.
Absolutely. The whole event is a family affair. It's great.
The last time I was on a bike, I think I was on it for maybe 15 minutes. And you said, I'll come home and I'll pound it out for 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that pretty standard? You spend 2 hours on your bike?
Very much. Absolutely. And it is. You know, you have a hard day and sometimes you just are so frustrated, but there's something about being out there on the trail that just really clears your mind. And again, I'm having conversations with youth, with teenagers. And while they're riding, I have finally gotten to the point that I can actually talk while I'm riding. It took a little while. But while they're riding and we're having those really good conversations about, you know, what's going on in their lives, it's just reminds you that there's some good in the world when you hear the things that they're talking about. So, but yeah, typically 2.5 hours, 3 nights a week.
And what is the terrain out there? Because you live in the mountains.
It's mountainous.
Wow.
Very rooty. And every, you know, we have races that are in North Georgia, but they also go down to Milledgeville. We have teams that are coming from Savannah.
Wow.
So it just depends on the terrain. There's some very sandy terrain, but typically we train on some pretty intense stuff. But that's the cool thing is that you learn, you get out there and you think, I can't do this. And maybe you can't the first time. But then your goal is, okay, I'm going to make it a little bit farther the next time, or I'm going to make it a little bit faster. So it's very easy to set goals and to meet those goals personally and to watch the students do it and to be able to celebrate with them when they accomplish something that maybe they couldn't do before.
I am seeing so many parallels between your trail work and your teacher work.
Yep.
And one of the things you also said about being on the trail as a coach was we're developing good people and using the bike to do
it. That's right.
What skills or growth are you seeing in these students?
Watching them have to overcome adversity. Mm. If you see a student, one of the coolest things at our races, they may get out there and something may happen, a chain may break. Watching them run across the finish line with their bike over their shoulders or running with their bike alongside and they didn't quit out there, that's huge. Like just teaching those problem-solving skills, teaching them how to make responsible decisions. You know, sometimes it's really hard if my children are sick and they want to be out there on the trail, but to say, hey, if you injure yourself worse or if you get, you know, more sick than you are now, then what's that going to do to you long term? So it's teaching them how to make grown-up decisions.
Yes.
And get preparing them for the types of things that they're going to need to do after they leave my house. So
yeah. Right. And there's physical development happening, but there's mm-hmm. also a lot of mental game in this with the psyche. You said it's about endurance and some other skills that you've learned, and you've got to focus on your balance and your speed. And mm-hmm. so you're thinking of 5 or 6 different factors at a time, which also is very similar to teachers.
Oh, absolutely.
So tell me, what's going on in your head mentally when you're out on that mountain bike? What are you thinking?
Don't fall. No, but really, truly, I am, you know, you're thinking through what is it that you want to accomplish. We had a practice this past week. Our trails have been a little bit devastated with the hurricane that came through. And so we aren't on our regular trail. So we are currently practicing on this gravel hill and we were doing hill repeats.
Ooh.
And so I am literally going, you know, you go up 5 minutes and then you ride back and you go up 5 minutes and just developing strength there. So while I'm in the midst of that, I'm thinking, okay, I just need to make it to the next tree. Okay, I need to make it to the following tree and thinking through how am I going to make it so that I can get to the top. And then on the way down, you're thinking, okay, I did that. I can do this again. Can I do this again? So it's just a lot of assessing. It's constantly assessing where you're at and also just making sure you are in a good place because you need to know, do I need to stop and take a break? Do I need to breathe for, you know, do I need to get a sip of water? So it's a very mental game. So it's
yes.
very physical, but there's a lot of mental that goes into it as well.
And like driving a car, there are certain practical checks you have. You have to check mm-hmm. your bike before you go out, you
yes.
said.
Yes.
That's a big thing. Any pointers to just us average bikers out on the road? What can we do to improve our bike rides?
We always talk about before the kids go out, they have to do their ABCDEs, which is check their air and check their brakes and their chain, their derailleurs. And then they just kind of check to make, that's the big thing is just checking to make sure everything is in working order because there's nothing more frustrating than getting out there and realizing I've made this more difficult than it needs to be just because I didn't do a simple check and making sure everything is in order. But I also would say go out with a friend. Don't go out by yourself.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. On some of the days that I have the most difficulty, if I've got somebody else that's talking to me and it's got my mind off of the hard work that I'm doing, I'll turn around and be like, wow, how did we make it that far? So I think that is great. It's just to go out with a partner and somebody that can encourage you along to get you there.
To get you there. And let's look at your story, your arc, not just on the trail, but in education. You started your career with the early childhood years. Mm-hmm. You've also taught gifted advanced classes, but you say that special education was just not on your radar.
Mm-mm.
Who put it there? Tell us that story.
Like you said, when I started, I thought I'm going to teach children how to read. That was my goal, is I wanted to teach kids to read. But I had some phenomenal administrators who saw capacity in me where I didn't. And it actually ended up in a situation where I was going to need to teach part-time for a little while. I had a new baby at home. I wanted to still teach, but I also wanted to spend some time with him. And so when I went to my administrators and said, hey, you know, do you have anything that's part-time? I don't want to stop doing this because I love it. And they said, you should teach special education. And I said, I'm not certified to teach special education, and I'm not sure that I should. And then they reminded me, I'd had many students come through my class who were in special education. I had been teaching them all along. I may not have been writing the IEPs for them, but I had been collaborating with their teachers. And so they challenged me to go, you know, get my certification, and I did. It's just one thing that led to another that led to another. It just opened up doors
Wow.
that I never saw coming at all. So I'm so thankful to have administrators who can see something in you and go, you know what? You would make a really good person in this area. Because oftentimes as teachers, you're in your little silo and
yeah.
you don't see outside of that silo to know that there's capacity for you to do something else.
Right. But somebody else might have a broader perspective.
Absolutely.
So trust their judgment on that.
Yeah.
Talk to us about Georgia Cyber Academy,
yeah.
which dovetails with your special education journey. And tell us about the four students in 2009 who changed everything for
you. Oh, yes. So when I started at Georgia Cyber, that's when I actually had my first job as an official special education teacher.
Wow.
So I had taught the special education students in the past in my own classroom. But, you know, I opened up the door and they said, you have 26 students. They had a very wide variety of needs. And at the school that I was coming from, primarily I was working with students with significant developmental delays. I wasn't working with students with vision impairments and other health impairments. That's not the way it had worked for me. So when I started at GCA, the first week I spent meeting my families, speaking to them on the phone because they're all over the state of Georgia. So I would call and get to know them. And at the end of a week, I realized I had four students in my class who had been diagnosed with dyslexia, and I knew absolutely nothing about dyslexia. And their parents were very adamant, like, what are you going to do to help my child learn? And I thought, I don't know. Right. Now, this is before all the dyslexia legislation. It was almost even an uncommon term at the time. So I reached out because we had teachers all over the state of Georgia. And I said, can anybody give me resources? What do you know? And there was very, very little that was known. So myself and another colleague got involved and went to a website, found some more information, and found a seminar that we could go to learn more, which led to learning about different curriculums. And it just opened up the door for me to learn how I can teach children whose brains are wired differently than I had ever done before. So it was just a whole new world. It just exposed me to something that I had not done before.
Yeah. Children whose brains are wired differently. Isn't that the perfect simple way to put it?
Oh, so much so.
And if you come to it with just that acceptance and that approach, you really tailor instruction, which I know is important to educators.
Absolutely.
Help us understand some of the nuances and terminology for special education students. You mentioned delays, but then there's disabilities. What's the difference?
So a delay typically is something that is just, well, it's just delayed. It's something that you can learn, and with time, it will resolve itself. And a disability is often, it's lifelong. There is not necessarily a fix to it. You have to learn how to accommodate. And so especially at the younger age, most of the students that I teach are initially diagnosed with a significant developmental delay, because when they're that young, you don't necessarily know, is this just a delay or is it truly a disability? And
so
it's really getting to the meat of figuring out how are we going to support this student? And some of the students that I work with over time are able to go and move and function in a general education classroom as though they had never been delayed, you know, and then other students need more additional support. So it's just kind of figuring out the differences between, do they need time or do they need supports?
Right.
Or both, a combination of both.
And there might be evidence at that young age, but the fuller picture might emerge over
yes.
time, you're saying.
Yes.
And you taught a self-contained class. What's the alternative? And what's it like having those students with you all day?
Oh, I love them. Oh, they're so good. So you have your self-contained, and typically with a self-contained class, these are students that have global delays. It's not just a math or just a reading, but they have delays that are in all areas. So they need support in all areas, which is why they traditionally stay with me. And a lot of times, too, they will have different adaptive delays. They may need help with common daily tasks. Other students may have delays just in math, and they may just need a co-taught class or a pull-out class where they get a little extra support in math. Like I said, with time, it can all switch depending on the
right.
types of accommodations that they have. But they do typically stay with me all day long, and it's beautiful. beautiful. But we do try. We want to make sure that they are exposed to other general education students. And we also want to make sure general education students are exposed to them.
Yes.
Absolutely. So we do whatever we can to partner with the other classrooms so that they can begin to develop those relationships. So they may be with me all day long, but we do a lot of work together to make sure that that is jiving the way that it should.
Right. And you're the expert. So what do you feel is the ideal positioning for special education students in Georgia schools? You know, I'm thinking of ways that schools might better capture their special education students in school traditions and school culture, be more inclusive.
Absolutely.
What
I
ideas
think it's
do you
just,
have?
You can't, it can't be an afterthought.
Yes.
And so anytime I've worked with administrators that truly have had a lot of experience, they understand there's so many complicated things that go into the different students. And every year I have a different group and they have different needs. And so just being cognizant that when there's a change in schedule or when there is a maybe some type of assembly that's coming up, when they come and ask me first, what do your students need so that they can be completely, you know, able to access what's going on? That is huge. When there's changes in schedule, a lot of times my students really struggle if it's not the same.
Their structure.
Yes. So if we are aware ahead of time and I can go ahead and be preparing them for a couple of days, then they're able to go into those assemblies or whatever the case may be and seem like a completely, like every other child that's out there. But if they don't have that, then it can be very upsetting to them and it can be disruptive to the other students as well. So I think just positioning and knowing special education, you really do, there's just so many nuances. And even if you're an administrator who has taught special education before, because every class is different or every child is different, there may be things that you're not considering, but that special education teacher knows the situations of those students. And so just being willing to say, hey, what do we need to do in this situation really sets them up for success. And then the other students see that they're able to do what everyone else is able to do too.
Which is what we want them at school for,
Absolutely.
To have that social experience in
yes.
addition to the learning. What is special to you about your special education students? You mentioned that your work together with these individuals is just beautiful.
It is. They are the coolest kids. And, you know, I mentioned before, they're wired differently oftentimes. So they see things differently than I would. And we have the funniest conversations sometimes. But like, we laugh all day long. The teacher that took over for me this year, she texted me recently and she said, you have the best class. She said, we have so much fun. We laugh all day. And I'm like, we do. But they see things differently and they will point them out or bring them up. And it's just a lot of fun. And like I said, we have many opportunities to celebrate. So it's just digging into what makes each child unique and being able to celebrate those things. And it's, you know, you just never know what they're going to do, what they're going to say. It's a lot of fun.
Your four students in 2009 who were dyslexic and your students today, you think of each one of them when you told me that you have had to become proficient
yes.
in federal law.
Ooh.
Why is that so important in the role that you're in?
You need to know the law. Obviously, we want to do what's best for our students. And being proficient in an area allows you to know what accommodations are out there, what supports could be provided for these students. And we want to make sure that the children are protected and that they receive all the rights that they have. So, you know, it's just learning out there, hey, these are mistakes that other counties or other schools have made. This is how you can learn from it so that you don't make the same mistakes so that these children can have the, you know, the opportunities that they deserve.
Right. Looking at all the information. And it feels divine, speaking of legislation, but Georgia Senate Bill 48 mm-hmm. goes into effect during the school year 2024-2025. The same year as your reign, Holly.
Yes.
And this is a bill that provides for the identification of and support for students in pre-K through second grade with dyslexia. These are your students. And when they say implementation and support and identification, what are we really talking about?
So there are a lot of screeners that
screeners.
Have been identified that the students will be given to determine, is this a child who has indicators of possible dyslexia? Because it's known that if you can address those early on and provide explicit instruction, they can overcome that reading gap. You do not want to get them to a situation where they're in third grade and we're just now figuring out wow, you know, they can't, that's a lot of catch up to do. So now this law allows us to start implementing earlier on. And they've also done a lot of research to determine, you know, what programs are good for this, what, you know, what could we be using? So systems across the state now have the tools, they know what they're looking for, and they have the tools to implement. So they're not in the position that I was, where I'm going, I don't know how to teach this child. Yes.
That's good. If we can avoid that for other teachers. Well, in the position you are in now as Teacher of the Year, are you hearing any feedback about how this is going? Have the students taken any screening tests yet?
They've done their first round of screening, and some counties started it last year. They were starting to, they piloted. There were several pilot. The counties that did the pilot systems had very, very good feedback. The implementation of it is going well. The biggest challenge right now has been time, because these are screeners that take, you have to do them independently. It's not like you can just give the screener to the entire class.
I see.
So the biggest challenge has been finding the time to do, you know, 10 minutes per child per screen. It's a lot. So that is really what this year and past years have been, is trying to figure out, okay, what counties are doing this well? How are you getting through this and in getting that information out there? But I do know they have said it's been very, I don't know the numbers, but there have been a lot of students that already have been identified as, hey, this child is at risk for possible dyslexia. We're going to do a little bit more digging and see how we can support them. And that is exciting, just to know that they're going to have their needs met before it becomes a prolonged
problem. Before it becomes a problem, yeah. It's a game changer for their entire learning experience.
Sure.
We've talked a lot about the mark that you've left on your students and the way that you've worked with them. And I want to dive into teachers now and what you're offering teachers as part of your platform. And it's incredible, I think. And it's very simple. Your driving message to teachers is two short words. What are they, and what does this mean to you?
You matter. And it really came back in March of 2023. Our district said, you need to come up with a platform that you would use if you were the Georgia Teacher of the Year. And it started, I made a list of things that I'm passionate about. Obviously, I can talk about things all day long. I love, you know, there's so many things that I love. And I was just overwhelmed looking at the list and thinking, okay, what would add value to teachers, all teachers, not just people that teach elementary school. What, you know, and so as I started looking at my list of things that I was passionate about, it was things that had been given to me by someone else. Somebody else had left a mark of some sort, like literacy. My mom is an avid reader. She took us to the library, you know, so many times. So there's different people that had left a mark in my life. And I just realized so many people have made an influence in who I am. You know, they mattered to me. And then it brought back, you know, in 2006, when I was in my fifth year of teaching, I almost left. I didn't think that I could continue. There was just a lot that was going on. And I had an administrator who looked at me and said, hey, you matter. I was overwhelmed with all of the changes that were happening. And she was like, forget this and forget that. But you as a teacher matter, and we need you here. And so it all just kind of started morphing together. And that's the message that I want to share with teachers. But I have to be very careful. It can't be something glib. I mean, you can't just say the words, hey, you matter.
Right.
You know, that can be very, it can almost be offensive if somebody is struggling with, do I stay or do I go, when you're like, hey, you're making a difference. So it's really digging in and finding out, what can we do to show educators that they are valued and that they are professionals and that we're treating them that way. So that's a big part of, I'm doing a lot of research to figure out, how can we help support, because we are losing phenomenal educators every day, and it just breaks my heart. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of, you know, what it is saying, yes, you matter, and here's how we can show that you matter.
Yeah. Yes, I love that. We need to show teachers that they do matter. We make that a big point on our podcast here. But also, how can educators use this phrase for themselves? How can you matter change their whole day and the way that they approach their classroom? Maybe it's written in front of them. Maybe it's a, you know, a personal mantra that they chant to themselves. How do you envision teachers can use this for themselves?
It is a little bit of the mantra that you have to say to yourselves. I have a file folder of anytime somebody has left me a positive note. That I keep on days that are really hard, that I can pull out and see, because it's hard to remember when you're in the midst of a mess that what you're doing does make a difference. And so, like, I have a folder and I'll pull it out and I'll read back over the notes that parents or administrators or coworkers. But I think also being cognizant of the people that you're around, because it's all about community. And so if I notice that the teacher in the room beside me is not taking a lunch anymore, or her habits have changed, you know, then I can say, are you doing okay?
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. is. It's knowing that you're valued as a human being. You know, it's not just something that I'm going to say to you, but hey, I'm recognizing that your patterns are different here. Are you okay? And how can I help? So that's a big point. Part of it is just being aware and knowing your coworkers well enough to know when there's been a change so that you can then, you don't have to say you matter, but you know, sometimes it's just the little things like, hey, I've got your class, go take a lunch. You know, I've gathered lots of stories from educators over the last 2 months where they have shared something that an administrator, something that a coworker has done that has shown them the value that they have. And that's kind of my challenge is, how can you show another coworker their value? Because we know, I mean, golly, I rely tremendously on my coworkers. And you think sometimes that you're telling them, hey, I appreciate you. But the reality is we get busy and we forget, or you're like, I'm going to write them a note, and you just don't. So what little things can we do that show them that, hey, I am glad you are here and I want you to stay. And what can I do to work with you?
Right. So it seems for you that part of the project here is the awareness of realizing the value educators have, that they do matter. And then part B of that is showing it,
absolutely,
acting on it. What are your goals as Teacher of the Year, Holly? Anything you really want to accomplish or any impression you want to leave on educators as you travel the state?
I just want teachers to know that they're valued.
Yes.
I'm so excited about, I've talked with Christy Todd a little bit about the work of being able to listen to other teachers and hear what their concerns are, and then being able to make those connections with the right people. And so that's one of the things that's been very exciting to me, is just being able to experience. There's a lot that goes on that I didn't realize went on as a classroom teacher, and
right?
Being exposed to some of those things, I'm like, this is fantastic. Does everybody know that this exists? So I'm excited to, when I go speak somewhere and somebody mentions something, to be able to make those connections for them and say, hey, did you know that this exists at Georgia Tech? Or were you aware that this college offers this program? So I really want to get out there as much as I can and experience as much of Georgia as I can and all the different districts, and hear and listen, and then be able to start to make some of those connections. I think that's what I'm most excited about.
Yes, and being able to, as we do here, broadcast that information.
Absolutely.
To teachers. Is there an upcoming function you're really looking forward to that the Teacher of the Year gets to do?
Oh, there's so many really cool functions. I'll tell you about one that I just finished, because it's just so much with me, the State Board of Education retreat.
Oh.
I just got back from that, and I left so very encouraged. And so that's the thing. Like, I don't even know what I'm looking forward to yet, because it's all so new. Like, I went into that going, this is going to be pretty neat. But I left and I thought, wow, this is amazing. We had legislators that were there. We had the Board of Education that was there. We had the Department of Education, and we were having real talks about, these are the real things that are happening. And everybody had a voice. And that was so exciting to me, because if an issue was raised or mentioned, then somebody else would speak up and say, how can I handle that? So it's cool. Like, I didn't go into that thinking that that's what that was going to be like. So it's hard for me to say, hey, I'm looking forward to this that's coming up, because I don't even know what I don't know, you know,
yeah.
And it's just the kind of thing.
So you're along for the ride.
Yes, absolutely. So I say yes to as many things as I can, because I don't want to miss something that could be a potentially life-changing thing for me.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
We're palpable change. You were in a room where that's where that kind of change begins.
Absolutely.
It's happening organically there. Did you take your mountain bike to the retreat?
I did not.
Oh, that's too
bad. It was only 45 minutes away. I did come home, and immediately I got on my bike and we rode that night. So
you got that in.
That's
well,
right.
Let's leave our educator audience with any techniques or revelations from your experience, specifically as a special education teacher working with special ed students, that might impact teachers of any discipline.
I would just say, if there's something that you don't know, dig in. You have to be a lifelong learner. There are so many things with students, giving them time. But if you ever encounter a student and you're not sure, you know, going to conferences or doing webcasts or whatever, just to learn more about what that is just so, it's so huge. But specific techniques, really, it's just offering opportunities for conversation. A lot of times students have forgotten, they really don't know how to communicate. But then once we can get them communicating and asking them, like, how would you best learn this? How, you know, what do you need? And having those conversations with them, a lot of times just asking them will open up your eyes to a whole different world.
Yeah, so that's a really good tip that will, as you say, on your mountain bike, help your teachers get to the next tree. Just
yeah,
get to the next tree and
that's
keep going.
It. That should be my hashtag, get to the next tree.
Get to the next tree. I like it. And you wear green. You wear green so much. So it's perfect.
That's
well, thank
right.
you for being here, Holly. You're going to leave a lasting educational imprint on Georgia's teachers. And I hope you're already feeling it.
Oh, it's so exciting. So exciting.
I'll let you get back to your official, or dare I say, royal duties.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Where do you go from here?
Let's see. I will actually be next week in St. Simon's going to speak to a teacher conference, and I'm speaking to the Department of Education, the CTAE program next week. So very exciting. October, when we're recording this, is a super busy month. So I'm excited to kind of get out and start seeing some of the different things that are happening.
Enjoy St. Simon's and keep up with those Facebook posts so we can all follow what
absolutely.
You're doing. In the words of one Facebook commenter, we have to send you off with this message, which was, I can't wait to see all the amazing things you're going to do.
That's right.
Have a great year, Holly. Thanks
Thank
for being here.
Thank you so much.
Well, teachers, you've heard it from our 2025 Georgia Teacher of the Year in two words, you matter. Write Holly's affirmation down, look at it daily, and remind others of it. And I've got a four-word reminder for you. We use it here often. You're a great teacher. Don't forget it. I'm Ashley, your servant host, and I'll return next week with more classroom conversations. Goodbye for now.